Yes, Charlie answered. I mean, I think so. They made their way slowly toward the open door. Charlie breathed shallowly, trying to register the slightest noise over the pounding of her own heart. As they reached the doorway, she heard a rustling, like someone stepping on soft leaves. John and Charlie split up and stood on either side of the doorway, Charlie by the hinges and John by the knob, and slowly he pushed the door the rest of the way open. Charlie saw the relief on his face before she saw what was in the room, a bed, a dresser, and absolutely nothing else, not even a closet. There was a window open, and John turned back toward Charlie.
I think we've got a way out, he said.
She smiled back shakily.
Stay back while I check, he whispered,
and before she could answer, he had pushed the door farther open into the room and was moving stealthily toward the open window, keeping in a straight line through the center of the room. Charlie stayed in the hall, pressing the door open so she could see the entirety of the room. Charlie watched nervously.
Hurry, she urged him silently.
Then, as she thought it, she felt the door stop against her fingers as though something was blocking the way.
Is there something behind the door?
Slowly, noiselessly, she leaned to the side and put her eye to the crack in the door, along the hinges. Her heart stopped. Another eye was looking back at her. Charlie staggered back. The door wavered for a moment, then slammed shut. From inside the room, something banged and crashed over and over against the wall.
John!
Charlie cried and beat against the door. Suddenly, the house went still, and a few moments later, the door drifted open and a figure glided out gracefully, stepping into the hall with care, as though trying not to wake a sleeping baby. Charlie stared disbelievingly at her duplicate, her mind hazily registering all the tiny differences between them as she struggled for words.
You're not me,
Charlie managed to say, and her own face smiled cruelly back at her.
I'm the only you that matters.
Chapter 12.
Is it working?
Marla asked, nervously tapping the device in her ear. Carlton sped up the car.
Mine worked, he said brusquely.
He glanced at her. She was kneading her hands together, her knuckles going white.
I mean, you can't really tell if it's working until...
Until what? Marla said.
Well, until you're in danger and...
And what?
Marla seemed impatient.
And you don't die.
Carlton nodded reassuringly.
So how do we know if they're not working?
Marla's voice had lost its energy.
Well, if it doesn't work, you won't have to worry about it for long.
He smiled.
Right.
Marla stopped fidgeting with the device and put her hand in her lap.
It will work. I rewired yours exactly like mine.
I'm not usually in the thick of this stuff, Marla said. I come in afterward with hugs and band-aids. If this were a movie, I'd be the lame babysitter, not the action hero.
There was a hint of bitterness in her voice, and Carlton looked at her, surprised.
Carlton, the road!
He snapped his attention back to what he was doing and gave the wheel a controlled jerk.
Marla, I've seen you in the thick of this stuff. Remember Freddy's?
She gave a half-hearted nod.
And don't dismiss the power of hugs and band-aids, he added, slowing the car as the restaurant sign came into view.
Circus Baby's Pizza blazed out over the night, casting half the block in garish red light.
Can't miss this,
Carlton remarked as they pulled into the parking lot. As soon as they were past the neon sign, its brilliant, witchy light faded into the background. The lot was stark and bare.
No one's here,
Are you sure about this? Marla said urgently.
No, but I know what I saw. Carlton drove slowly toward the entrance, pointing toward the clown girl mascot leaning over the entryway sign. And that is who attacked me.
They parked close to the building. Carlton stopped to rummage around in the trunk for a minute, coming up with two small flashlights. He flicked one on and off experimentally, then handed it to Marla.
Thanks, she whispered.
They started around the side of the building, and Carlton swept his light along the wall, illuminating a row of tall, rectangular windows. The window surfaces were tinted so dark they could not see in, and the frames were smooth black metal, with nowhere to force an opening. Carlton shook his head and gestured toward the back of the building. Marla nodded, gripping her flashlight like a lifeline. There was more parking behind the building, and the back wall was lined with trash cans, two dumpsters sticking out on either side of a metal door. The only light came from a single, flickering orange bulb, set above the plain door like a decoration.
"Looks like this is our way in," Carlton whispered.
"Look!" Marla shone her light down onto fresh prints in the mud, tracking close to the wall and leading up to the door.
"Jessica?" Marla looked to Carlton.
"Maybe." Marla grabbed the door handle and pulled hard, but it didn't budge.
"I don't think we'll find another way in," she whispered,
and he grinned.
"You think I didn't come prepared?" Carlton said, slipping a flat leather case from his pocket.
He held it out to her.
"Hold this," he said, and selected several thin strips of metal as she balanced the case for him.
"Are those lockpicks?" Marla hissed.
"If there's one thing I've learned from watching my dad, it's that lockpicking can be used for good," Carlton said solemnly.
He bent over the lock, trying to keep his head out of the way of the light, and slowly began to wriggle the lockpicks into place.
"Oh, whatever. You can't pick a lock. Can you? Is it even legal to own these?"
Marla asked. He looked back at her. She was holding the kit away from her body, as if trying to disassociate herself from it.
"It's legal as long as you don't pick any locks," he said. "Now be quiet so I can pick this lock."
Marla looked around nervously, but didn't say anything. He turned his attention back to the door, listening for the telltale clicks of the tumblers falling into place as he carefully made his way through the mechanism.
"This is taking forever," Marla whined. "I didn't say I was good at this," he said absently.
"Got it," he grinned, triumphant. The door opened with a creak, revealing a wide hallway with a gentle upward slope. The hall itself was dark, but a few yards ahead, they could see the dim glow of fluorescent lights. Marla pulled the door closed behind them, cushioning it with her hands so that it wouldn't slam. The light was coming from an open door on the left side of the hall. They waited, but no sound came from its direction, and they started to move, hugging the wall. As they got closer, Carlton sniffed the air.
"Shh,"
Marla hissed, and he jerked his head toward the door.
"Pizza," he whispered. "Can't you smell it?"
Marla nodded and impatiently waved him forward.
"Of all the smells in this place, that's the one that catches your attention."
The open door proved to be the kitchen, and they glanced around briefly. Then Carlton went to a large refrigerator and pulled it open.
"Carlton, forget the pizza!"
Marla said in dismay, but the refrigerator held only racks of ingredients. Carlton closed the door.
"You never know who could have been hiding in there," he said quietly as they exited the kitchen.
At the end of the hall was a swinging double door, with small windows just at Carlton's eye height, and he surveyed what he could see of the next room, then pushed the door open. Marla gasped.
"Creepy."
Carlton said mildly. The dining room in front of them was lit with the same dim, fluorescent light, giving the brand new place an odd dullness. There were tables and chairs at the center, and arcade games and play areas along all the walls, but their eyes were drawn immediately to the small stage at the back corner. Its purple curtain was pulled open, and it was empty, except for a bright yellow rope strung across the front and a sign with a picture of a clock on it. "Next show," it read in neat, handwritten letters, but the clock had no hands. Marla shivered, and Carlton nudged her.
"It's not the same," he whispered.
"It's exactly the same," she said.
Carlton looked around at the rest of the room, his eyes lighting on a ball pit that stuck out from the front wall in a half circle, a round red plastic awning arcing over it, trimmed with white.
"Look at the monkey bars," she pointed.
Across the room, three small children steadily climbed the tangled structure of red and yellow bars. Carlton, startled, looked at Marla with surprise, then ran to them.
"Are you okay? Where are your parents?" he asked breathlessly, then his mouth went dry.
The children were not human or alive. Their animatronic faces were painted like clowns, their features absurdly exaggerated. One had a round, red nose that covered half its face and a white wig of synthetic curls. Another had a molded smile on its face and a painted red grimace. The third, a red-cheeked, smiling clown with a rainbow-colored wig, looked almost cute, except for the gigantic spring that replaced the middle of its torso, boinging up and down each time it moved. All of them had black eyes, with no iris or pupil, and they did not appear to see Carlton. He waved his hands, but they did not turn their heads, just kept grasping the bars with their pudgy hands and pulling themselves along the structure with uncanny precision. All of them emitted a loud whirring sound, as if they were wind-up toys that had been set loose to climb. The child with the spring suddenly flung its top half over the top of the bars, the spring extending into a long, wavy wire, then it grabbed a bar, and its feet shot into the air wildly and came snapping back into place on the other side.
"My mistake. You're not the kids we're looking for. Carry on," Carlton whispered shakily as the creatures continued, weaving over and under, back and forth through the structure.
"They don't see us," Marla whispered, and it took him a moment to register her voice.
"What?"
he said, his eyes still on the clown children.
"They don't see us," she repeated. "These little things are working."
She tapped her ear.
"Right, good," Carlton said, pulling himself away from the scene.
Marla was smiling with relief.
"We still have to be careful, though," he warned. "I can't guarantee it works on everything, and it definitely won't work on people."
Marla shivered, then nodded quickly.
"There's a room past the stage," she said.
"Looks like an arcade," Carlton said grimly.
Marla slowed by the stage, her hand drifting toward the curtain as if she might try to look behind it.
"No," Carlton grabbed Marla's hand. "The last thing we want to do is call any attention to ourselves."
Marla nodded in agreement. The arcade smelled overpoweringly of new plastic, the games gleaming and scarcely played. There were a dozen or so freestanding arcade cabinets and two pinball machines, one, predictably by now, clown-themed, and the other painted with cartoonish snake charmers. Carlton gave them a wide berth. Marla caught his sleeve and gestured to a closed door on the wall to their left, an exit sign glowing red above it, and he nodded. They headed for it, creeping past a test-your-strength game, governed by an adult-sized clown with a face made of jagged metal plates who nodded continuously, its painted smile maniacal. As they passed, Carlton watched it carefully, but its eyes did not seem to track their movements. When they reached the door, Carlton took a deep breath, then gently pushed on the bar. It gave way immediately, and Marla sighed with relief. Carlton pushed the door open, holding it out for her, then froze as the unmistakable clack of servos broke the silence behind them. They both spun around. Carlton braced his arm in front of Marla's chest protectively, his heart racing, but nothing was moving. He scanned the room, then saw it. The clown standing over the game was staring at them, its head cocked to the side. Carlton glanced at Marla, and she nodded minutely. She had seen it too. Slowly, she backed through the door as Carlton watched the animatronic, but it showed no further signs of movement. When Marla was safely through the door, Carlton waved his arms, hoping desperately that it would not see him. The clown remained motionless, having apparently returned to stasis. Carlton slipped out of the room and closed the door carefully behind him. He turned and almost fell over Marla, who was backed up almost to the wall. "Watch it," he whispered good-naturedly, catching her shoulder for balance. Then he looked up and swayed on his feet, disoriented by a dozen distorted, menacing figures. He took a breath, and the room fell into place. Mirrors. Before them was an array of funhouse mirrors, each one distorting the images it reflected. Carlton's eyes flitted from one to the next. One showed him and Marla as tall as the ceiling. In the next, they were blown up like balloons, crowding each other out of the frame. In the next, their bodies looked normal, but their heads shrank to stalks an inch wide. "Okay, then," he whispered. "How do we get out of here?" As if in answer to his question, two mirrors slowly began to swivel, turning toward each other until they had made a narrow door in the wall of close-set panels. Beyond the small opening lay more mirrors, but Carlton could not tell how many there were or which way they were directed, as one mirror caught another, doubling the reflections until it was impossible to see what was real and what was not. Marla stepped through the gap and beckoned. There was a gleam in her eye, but Carlton couldn't tell if it was excitement or the strange, dim light. He followed her, and as soon as he was through the gap, the panels began to pivot again, closing them inside. Carlton glanced around, growing nervous now that their exit had been blocked off. They seemed to be in a narrow corridor that branched off in two directions, the walls made of more floor-to-ceiling mirror panels.
"It's a maze," Marla whispered, and gave him a smile when she saw the look on his face. "Don't worry," she added. "I'm good at mazes."
"You're good at mazes?" Carlton said with irritation. "What is that supposed to mean? I'm good at mazes."
"What's wrong with saying that? I've always been good with mazes."
Marla shook her head. "What, like the hay maze? When we were five? Is that what you're talking about?"
"I got through it before anyone else did."
"You climbed over the top of the bales. You're not supposed to do that."
"Oh, you're right."
Marla's face flushed.
"I'm not good at mazes."
"We will get through this together." Carlton took her hand, long enough to stop her from having a panic attack, then released it. She looked in both directions, thoughtful, then pointed decisively.
"Let's try that way," she said.
They started down the path she had chosen, and Carlton followed, keeping his eyes on her feet in front of him. After only a few steps, he heard her sharp intake of breath and snapped his head up. They were at a dead end. "Dead end already?" he said, surprised.
"No, the panel closed," she hissed.
"This way, hay maze," Carlton said with a hint of amusement. "Back this way." They started back the way they had come, and this time Carlton saw the panels move. As they moved back to the spot where they had come in, a panel swung toward them, cutting off their path. A second later, another panel swung away, opening a new corridor. Marla hesitated, and Carlton stepped up beside her.
"No choice. Let's go," he said.
She nodded, and they walked deeper into the maze. As soon as they had crossed the new threshold, the panel swung shut. They looked around for the new opening, but there was none. They were enclosed on all sides by mirrors. Carlton walked the small perimeter quickly, beginning to panic.
"Carlton, just wait. Another one will open," Marla whispered.
"I know you're in here,"
an unfamiliar voice rang out. It seemed to come from everywhere at once, echoing like it was bouncing from panel to panel. The sound was mechanical, glitching out mid-word. They exchanged a glance. Marla's face was pale with fear.
"There!"
Carlton pointed. A panel had opened while they were distracted. He rushed for it and walked into a mirror, smacking his head on the glass.
"Ow!"
"It's there!"
Marla hissed, pointing to the opposite side of the enclosure. The panel began to swing shut, closing the room off again.
"I'll find you."
The glitching voice had a strange, unsteady tone.
"Carlton!"
Marla stood in the gap, holding out a hand, and he ran for her, both of them making it through just as the panel rotated back to its position.
"What were you going to do? Stand there and let it crush you?"
Carlton hissed.
"I hadn't considered we would get caught between the panels. This place is just asking for a lawsuit."
Marla straightened herself.
"It's been a lovely evening, but I think I'd like you to take me home now," she said calmly.
"Take you home? Take me home,"
Carlton said before pausing to listen.
"I know just where you are."
They were in a hallway again, this one with two corners to choose from. They exchanged a grim look and turned to the left, moving slowly. Carlton kept his eyes on Marla's shoes ahead of him, trying not to look at the walls on either side, where ranks of their duplicates marched silently beside them, misshapen and warped in the mirrors, then, occasionally, appearing normal. When they reached the corner, something flashed in the corner of his eye, a reflection of a reflection of giant eyes, staring at them. Carlton grabbed Marla's shoulder.
"Over there!"
She shuddered.
"I saw it too.
Come on, go, go, go!" Marla whispered. "Just follow me. Stay calm. Remember, nothing can see us."
"I'm getting closer,"
the mechanical voice echoed through the chamber.
"It's just a recording," Carlton whispered. "It's coming from everywhere. I don't think there is anything actually in here with us."
Marla nodded, looking unconvinced. A few steps ahead of them, panels began to pivot again, closing off their path. Carlton glanced behind them. The other end of the hall had closed too. Marla inched closer to him.
"I see you."
"Shut up," Carlton whispered. He tried to slow his breathing so it made no sound, imagining the air going in and out, filling his lungs without touching the sides. The panel to their right began to swing open slowly, and they backed out of its way. Marla gasped, and Carlton grabbed her arm, seeing it. There was something behind the slowly opening mirror, though he couldn't make out what. They backed up farther, taking small, cautious steps. Carlton searched the mirrored panels for an exit, but saw only his own face, bulging and deformed.
"There you are."
The panel opened, revealing a kaleidoscope of purple, white, and silver, glancing off every mirror disjointedly. Carlton blinked, trying to make sense of the reflections, Then a figure at the center stepped into the makeshift room. He was a bear, built like Freddy Fazbear, and yet entirely unlike him. His metal body was gleaming white, accented with vibrant purple. He held a microphone in his hand, the top sparkling like a disco ball, and on his chest, at the center of a purple metal shirt front, was a small, round speaker. Only a few feet from them, the new Freddy turned his massive head from side to side, his eyes passing over them. Carlton glanced at Marla, who tapped her ear and nodded. He put his finger to his lips. Freddy took two steps forward, and they stepped back, pressing against the wall. Freddy looked from side to side again.
I know just where you are.
The sound was ear-splitting, rattling Carlton's teeth, but Freddy's mouth did not move. The voice was projecting from the speaker in his chest. Carlton held his breath as the bear's eyes passed over him, reminding himself that he was masked, but the bear's eyes hesitated on him before moving away. Carlton could feel the sweat beading on his forehead. The wall behind them repositioned, and Carlton shifted his weight just in time not to fall, Marla moving just behind him. The panel swung open slowly, and they edged away as Freddy walked slowly in their direction, heading for the new exit, where they were now standing. Marla touched Carlton's arm, guiding him to the side just as Freddy lumbered past them, his shiny surface almost brushing against Carlton's nose.
I'm getting closer,
Freddy stuttered menacingly as he disappeared around a corner. The panel began to swing shut, and Marla pointed urgently to the door Freddy had come in. They raced for it, making it through just before the mirrors closed. Carlton and Marla stared at each other, gasping as if they'd run miles.
Was that Freddy?
She whispered. He shook his head. I don't know, but he was different, Carlton said.
What? Different from what?
The other animatronics we've seen so far. He was looking at me, Carlton said uncomfortably.
They're all looking at us.
No, he was looking at me.
I can hear you. Come on out,
Freddy called out as if on cue. His voice echoed through the maze of mirrors, as impossible to locate as it had been before. Carlton took a deep, steadying breath. How are we supposed to get out of here? He whispered, trying to sound calmer than he felt. Where even are we?
There, that light!
Marla pointed over their heads at the rafters above them, where a red stage light beamed down over the entirety of the maze.
What? I saw that light when we first came in, but it must have been at least 20 feet away. Now it's right over our heads. We just have to keep moving away from it now, she said confidently.
Carlton studied the ceiling for a moment, considering what she'd said.
I told you, I'm good at mazes,
she winked.
We just have to wait for the right panels to open.
She pointed toward a specific panel.
That could take ages, Carlton said despairingly. It will take longer if we don't keep track of what direction we're going in, Marla said. Come on.
She set off down the path she had indicated, and Carlton followed close behind.
I'm getting closer.
Freddy's voice resounded through the maze.
That sounded like it was behind us again. He's coming around, Carlton whispered. Okay, okay, then we go around too. Just get us out, he said quietly.
Marla nodded, and they walked cautiously onward, flanked by their various distorted duplicates. The pivoting panels forced them nearly in a circle before giving them a choice of direction, and Marla leaped on the chance, grabbing Carlton by the hand and almost running down the passage until they were stopped again and made to turn. Shh, Carlton hissed frantically. Marla pushed experimentally on the side of one of the panels, but it didn't budge. Carlton stepped up to help, throwing his full weight against the mirror, but even under their combined force, it would not turn.
I don't know why I thought that would work, Marla whispered.
I've almost got you,
Freddy intoned. Marla looked around uncertainly.
I've got a really terrible idea, Carlton said slowly.
Marla gave him a warning look.
Are you still keeping track of where we are, or at least the direction that we should go?
I think so, she said, scanning the rafters again, a look of comprehension dawning on her face.
Close enough, he said.
What are you going to do?
Marla asked, sounding like she already regretted it. Carlton took the flashlight out of his pocket and made a fist around it, wound up his arm, and smashed the butt of the light into the mirror in front of them. The glass shattered with a high, clear noise, and a dull pain reverberated up his arm.
I can hear you in the air,
Freddy's voice sputtered from all around them.
Does he just say that, or did he actually hear that? Marla said.
The panel with the broken mirror swung open, but before they could move, there was a rushing sound of heavy footsteps and crunching glass shards. Carlton held his breath and nodded to Marla. Freddy stepped into the room with forceful steps, then immediately stopped in the center, his upper body slowly turning to scan the surroundings. Carlton and Marla crept around the glass shards and snuck through the open panel behind the animatronic. In the corridor, Carlton looked questioningly at Marla, and she pointed. He nodded, strode to the farthest mirror, and smashed it. In an instant, Freddy pivoted toward them. The wide-eyed face turned from side to side. After a moment, another panel began to open beyond the freshly broken mirror. Carlton and Marla ran for it, the glass breaking beneath their feet.
There!
Marla yelled. Carlton looked up and could see an exit sign above a door, just a few yards from where they stood. Marla caught Carlton's eye and mouthed,
We're almost there.
Come back here,
said Freddy's maniacal voice, and then they all stepped out into the last passage. A jauntily painted ticket booth was visible, and beyond that, an open wall. Marla and Carlton exchanged a glance and cautiously sped up.
Got you, Freddy said.
The speaker was right behind Carlton's head, and Carlton startled, tripping over his own feet. He righted himself with a palm on the mirror, then took off after Marla and ran straight into his own reflection, hitting his face on the glass.
Marla, wait,
he screamed. He could see her reflected in three mirrors, but was still unsure of where she had actually gone.
Wait!
He rubbed his forehead and looked into the nearest mirror, trying to see if he was bleeding. He was not, but something was wrong. It took him a second to realize that his earpiece had been knocked loose. He looked around in panic, when suddenly Freddy loomed behind him in the mirror. Carlton froze in place. The massive white and purple bear's head was staring at him from the mirror, looming over his shoulder. He looked down and saw the earpiece at his feet. In one swift motion, he leaned down to grab it. His hands were shaking, and he struggled to get it back into his ear. When he looked up, Freddy was standing over him, and Carlton was lifted off his feet with a sudden, painful force. Carlton jerked and dropped back to the ground, the earpiece falling beside him. Freddy drew back and stared at Carlton for a moment, his eyes clicking back and forth, and his mouth opened just enough to reveal two long rows of perfectly polished white teeth. Carlton leaped toward the earpiece on the ground just as Freddy's arm shot out and shattered another glass panel. Carlton hit the wall head first with a bang and recoiled in pain. Freddy turned his head, first from side to side, then all the way around to face backward, his eyes searching wildly. Carlton scanned the ground in a panic and saw the earpiece again, but it was in three places, in three mirrors. The glass crunched again nearby, but Carlton kept his eyes on the earpieces, switching from one to another in a desperate attempt to see which one was real. Suddenly, a human hand reached down and grabbed the earpiece in each of the three panels.
"Carlton!" Marla called, and he turned toward the sound and saw her. Not a reflection, but the real Marla as she threw the earpiece to him.
Carlton snatched the earpiece out of the air and shoved it into his ear. Freddy stopped in place, his arms still outstretched. Carlton didn't dare move, though the microphone was inches from his face. In his peripheral vision, he could see Marla inching toward a door with exit over it. Freddy turned his head from side to side again as he slowly straightened from his attacking posture.
"I'll find you," came the voice from his chest, and he lowered his arms.
Marla turned the doorknob and pushed the door slowly open, just enough to see that it was unlocked. Scarcely breathing, Carlton backed away from Freddy, keeping his eyes on the animatronic until he was beside Marla. In one fluid motion, she eased open the door. They darted through it, then shoved it closed behind them. There was a deadbolt near the top, and Carlton flipped it, put his ear to the crack. There was nothing but silence from the other side, and he turned to Marla and heaved a sigh, lightheaded with relief. They were in a dark hall, completely free of mirrors.
"Dark, scary hallway," Marla muttered.
"It's beautiful," Carlton said.
A scream ripped through the air from somewhere nearby, and they both froze.
"Not finished yet," Carlton said,
and took off running toward the sound, Marla close at his heels.
Chapter 13.
"Everyone be very quiet," Jessica whispered.
The children just stared at her, their eyes wide and solemn. They stood together in the back corner of the small, dank room, awaiting her instructions. 3-year-old Lisa was still huddled behind Ron, her chosen protector, and Alana had taken hold of the little blonde boy's hand, though he was wriggling in her grasp. Jessica swallowed.
"Why do I have to be the leader? It's bad enough when I'm just in charge of myself."
She bent down to the children's level, trying to summon some kind of leadership quality.
"Should have listened to Mom. Should have played a team sport. But no, I had to be the quiet girl in the corner chewing the eraser off her pencil."
Jessica studied the door again, then took a more serious tone.
"Is there something out there?"
Alana and Ron exchanged a worried glance.
"What's outside? You can tell me," Jessica pleaded.
"It comes in through the door," Alana said, not meeting Jessica's eyes.
"She..."
The little girl broke off and covered her face, mumbling something unintelligible behind the mask of her hands.
"She? Who? The woman who took you?"
Jessica asked gently, trying to contain her impatience. Alana shook her head vigorously, her face still hidden.
"We thought it was a toy. It wasn't scary like everything else."
Ron searched for words, and Lisa tugged on his shirt and whispered something, too quietly for Jessica to make out. Ron nudged her.
"Tell her."
Lisa looked up at Jessica with a suspicious expression on her grubby toddler's face.
"She's all mangled up," the girl said, then turned away again, hiding her face in Ron's shirt.
He gave Jessica a distressed look.
"Who's all mangled up?"
Jessica said slowly, searching her mind for what they might be talking about.
Was something broken? Did you break one of them?
She asked hopefully. The little kids all began to sniffle again, and she ground her teeth.
What is it?
Jessica nearly snapped, but none of them seemed to notice her tone.
It's not broken,
Ron said, his voice rising in panic, and then the floor shook with a resounding thud. Alana grabbed Jessica around the waist, and Ron huddled closer, pulling Lisa with him. The little blonde boy stayed where he was, frozen in place with a look of terror. There was another thud, this time louder. Then the pounding continued over and over, coming closer. Jessica could hear it moving in the hall, reverberating deep in her chest as whatever it was came thundering toward the door outside. She heard wood cracking and clutched the children's shoulders as something struck the wall 3 times in quick succession, rocking them all back. There was a final, clattering noise that seemed to come from all around.
What is that?
Jessica whispered, searching the walls and ceiling, unable to make sense of the noises. Then everything fell silent. They waited. Jessica listened, counting to 10, then 20, and the sound did not come again. She counted to 30, then 60.
I have to do something.
She straightened, carefully extracting herself from Alana's grasp.
Wait here, she whispered.
She crept toward the door, stepping as softly as she could. As she moved, she could feel their eyes on her. The door was ordinary-looking, a wooden door with a brass knob, the kind you'd see on a closet. Jessica took a quick, deep breath, then stretched out her arm to take the knob. Before she could touch it, the knob turned, and the door began to slide open. Jessica held her breath and took steady steps backward, desperately wanting to rejoin the group, even if they were just children. At first, Jessica saw only pink and white, the shapes indistinct, then her mind made sense of it. Slowly, the enormous head of a garishly painted fox peered into the room.
Foxy?
Jessica thought, hazily taking in pointed pink ears and yellow eyes. Its cheeks were painted with red circles, like the animatronic girls had been. The creature looked at her for a long moment, and she stared back, unable to remember how to move her feet. And then the fox head retreated, and all the children screamed. Something new sprang violently into the room, a long and segmented metal limb like a spider's leg. It braced against the floor just as a second metal leg violently invaded the space, embedding itself in the nearest wall. The children screamed, and Jessica raced toward them, looking frantically for a way out. The room was filling with arms and legs, extended and contorted, some with hands, others without. Jessica searched for a place to run through the steadily thickening mass of legs. Her eyes met the yellow eyes of the fox head, now suspended in the air by rods and beams. But there was another set of eyes as well. Does it have 2 heads? The unskinned metal skull lowered itself. It was connected to the mass above by cables and cords, and seemed to move of its own will. One high-pitched scream rose above the others, a blood-curdling wail.
Lisa!
Ron cried, and Jessica saw that the thing had one hand on the little girl's arm and was pulling her toward it. The skinless metal head studied her, then swiveled and swung on its cables to the others, taking an aggressive stance toward them as the metal limbs entangled the little girl and pulled her toward the door.
No!
Jessica cried, climbing through the snares of metal coils and grabbing Lisa's tiny hand. A violent surge threw her back, but she held fast to whatever she had managed to grasp, letting go only as she hit the floor. She struggled for air as she got to her feet, but the creature had already retreated through the doorway and disappeared. Jessica whirled, looking frantically to the children, and her heart nearly burst with relief. Lisa was on the ground beside her, and Ron and Alana were helping her up. Jessica rushed to them.
"It's okay," she whispered.
Then the momentary relief vanished. The blonde boy, the one who might have been Jacob, was gone.
"I couldn't hold on to him,"
Alana wailed, as if reading Jessica's mind. Jessica looked to the door in despair, but quickly steadied herself.
"We'll get him back,"
Jessica said, because it was all she could think of to say. She glanced around helplessly, then froze as the doorknob slowly began to turn again.
"Stay here,"
Jessica said in a low voice, and she moved quickly to the door. She stood to the side, bracing herself to jump on whatever came through.
"This is your plan."
The door opened, and Jessica screamed and lunged into the doorway, as though ready to karate chop whatever was coming through. Carlton and Marla jumped back with startled expressions, and Jessica stared for a moment, then seized Carlton in a hug, holding tight to his shoulders as if he could stop her from shaking.
"Jessica?"
Marla said, spotting the children. Jessica pushed Carlton away.
"Something got one of the kids, a little boy," she said in a rush. "I didn't see where it went."
Marla was already beside the children, checking them for injury.
"We have to get them out," she said.
"Oh, really, Marla? Is that what we should be doing? Here I was painting my nails,"
Jessica said crisply. Carlton reached for his ear and pulled something out. "Here, take this," he said.
"What? Ew!"
Jessica made a face instinctively, then peered at the tiny device.
"Is that a hearing aid?"
"Not exactly. It makes you invisible to the animatronics. You and Marla take these kids out. I'll find the other kid they took."
"How does it..."
Jessica took the device and studied it.
"I have to put it in my ear?"
"Yes, you have to put it in your ear. I'll explain later."
"But are your ears even clean?"
She leaned in, peering suspiciously at Carlton's ear. Marla grabbed the earpiece out of her hand and shoved it into Jessica's ear.
"Ow!"
Jessica cried. Marla turned back to the kids.
"Shouldn't we give them to the children instead?"
"There are only two earpieces, and you can both protect them better if you're invisible, right?" Carlton said irritably.
"What if Jess and I stay here with the kids, and you take one out at a time, wearing the earpieces?"
Marla pressed. Jessica shook her head immediately.
"And what if that thing comes back and kills us all while we're waiting for Carlton to take his sweet time? We have to make a break for it, Marla. It's the only way."
They were all quiet for a moment. Carlton looked from Jessica to Marla and back. "Right? Now give me 30 seconds to get away from here. That way if something chases me, I can draw them away from you. Anything I should know?" Carlton paused at the door.
"Afton's still alive,"
Jessica said, and he nodded. "This ends today," he said quietly. "One way or another. Not one more child dies because of that psychopath. I owe that much to Michael." Jessica bit her lip.
"We all do,"
she said. He forced a smile. "Good luck."
"Good luck,"
she echoed.
"Right."
Carlton clenched his jaw, then squared his shoulders and held the door open, poised to exit.
"This was my idea,"
he muttered, then closed the door behind him.
"Marla, do you know the way out?"
Jessica asked, surprised to hear her own voice come out clear and steady. Marla nodded, standing up.
"We came in the back way, but I think if we go back down that hall, we can get out into the main dining room. Should be easy to get out from there, right?"
"You'd think so,"
Jessica muttered with an edge. Marla gave her a level look.
You got something better? No, I don't.
Jessica turned to the three remaining children, who were watching them with wide eyes.
We don't have to get far, she said, searching for scraps of hope to offer them. I need you to stay together, and stay with me and Marla. If you can do that, we'll all be okay.
They looked at her like they knew she was lying, but no one said a word. Jessica opened the door again carefully. The hallway outside the little room was dark, but Marla led them onward as if she really did know where they were headed. She held a large, battered flashlight out in front of her. She looked poised to turn it on, but refrained from doing so, seemingly afraid of attracting more unwanted attention. Jessica's eyes adjusted to the dim light as she took up the rear, alert to the slightest sign of danger. They came to a T in the hall, and Marla turned without hesitation. A few yards ahead there was light. Strings of small, bare bulbs lit the way at intervals, and the next fork in the hall was visible.
We're getting closer, Jessica thought, as they moved cautiously onward.
A soft popping noise caught Jessica's attention overhead, and she froze.
Marla!
She hissed, and Marla and the children ahead stopped and turned around. Marla pointed up with a worried expression, and Jessica looked up to see that some of the bulbs over her head had gone out, their glass made opaque with a sooty film.
Just old lights, Jessica breathed.
A light above Marla burst and died, and all of them jumped. Alana clapped both hands over her mouth, and Ron put a hand on Lisa's shoulder.
Can we go faster?
Lisa whispered. All at once, the rest of the light bulbs flickered and clattered. Jessica held her breath. They stayed on, preserving the little light, but overhead something hollow and metallic rattled in the ceiling. Marla's face went pale.
Keep moving, she said tightly.
Jessica gave a sharp nod. The rattling noise kept pace, sometimes seeming to come from above them, and sometimes from the dark corners just out of view, scraping and clattering in a vent or crawl space. Lisa whimpered. The older children's faces were stony, but Jessica could see the glimmer of tears on their cheeks. Suddenly, Marla stopped short, and Jessica almost bumped into Ron.
What?
She hissed, then saw. A thin curtain of dust was falling from above. Jessica looked up and saw the open duct directly above them. A multi-segmented metal arm covered with springs and wires dropped down through the open duct, anchoring itself to the floor right next to Jessica's foot. Everyone screamed. The arm retracted, then two more of the creature's contorted limbs smashed down to the ground, raining down plaster and dust.
Run!
Marla screamed. They took off down the hallway as the creature lowered its full form into the space, its shiny white fox head turning and smiling in their direction as they fled. Jessica glanced back, and the unskinned head dropped too, grinning upside down, a red bow tie joining their necks ridiculously. Jessica fled. Behind her came an enormous thud.
Run faster!
She wanted to scream, but the others were gasping for breath, already running at their full capacity. The children were pounding along as fast as they could, but Lisa, the smallest, began to fall behind. The creature shot past Jessica, reaching out for the little girl again, and Jessica grabbed her, yanking her up and out of reach just in time. It reared back to strike again, and Jessica clutched Lisa to her chest and ran on. They rounded a corner, and with a flare of hope, Jessica saw that the hall was short, ending in a heavy set of double doors. Marla sped up, and Alana and Ron did the same. Jessica kept her pace, staying at the back as Lisa clung to her with startling strength. Marla reached the end of the hall and slammed herself against the emergency bar, and the doors split open. They raced through, and Marla flung the door shut, grabbing a nearby signpost and jamming it through the door handles.
"Keep running,"
Jessica said with a fresh pump of adrenaline. She looked around. They were up against the wall, behind a popcorn popper and a cotton candy machine. She glanced back briefly at the sign Marla had barred the door with. "Let's eat," it read in big, round letters. Ron leaned to the side, about to peek between the machines.
"Hold on,"
she hissed, putting a hand on his shoulder. He drew back as if something had burned him.
"It'll be okay," Marla said, and Jessica marveled briefly that she sounded like she believed what she was saying.
Behind them, something crashed against the door again, rattling the door frame. Jessica waited, her eyes on the makeshift barricade, but nothing came.
"We have to move slowly and quietly," she whispered, and the three children nodded in unison. "Stay back," Jessica told them, and stepped out past the popcorn machine, alert to danger.
She took a second to get her bearings. The walls of the dining room were lined with arcade games and children's play areas, and on the far side of the room, blissfully, were the wide glass doors of the entrance. She motioned the others forward. The children, huddled together, followed her into the open room with Marla close behind.
"Hurry,"
she urged, and Marla nodded, taking Lisa's hand as Alana and Ron followed behind her, their faces pinched with exhaustion. Suddenly, Alana screamed, and Jessica jumped.
"What? What is it?"
The girl was pointing at a jungle gym a few feet away, where two toddlers, too small to climb the bars, were nonetheless doing so.
"It's okay, they're just toys," Marla said, looking back at Jessica with a frazzled expression. "We saw them on the way in."
Alana screamed again and ran to Jessica, grabbing onto her waist.
"It bit me!"
"What?" Jessica looked down. Alana's ankle was bleeding, though not badly, and a few feet away was another crawling, robotic child.
"Jessica!"
Marla screamed, touching the device in her ear nervously.
"It can't see us, but it can see them."
As she spoke, the two other robotic children on the monkey bars lowered themselves unsteadily to the ground and began to crawl straight toward Lisa and Ron. They backed away, and a fourth appeared, boxing them in. Marla scooped up Lisa and Alana and tried to hold them away from harm.
"Jessica!"
Marla screamed.
"Help! It bit me!"
Alana repeated, panic in her voice, and the children clung together as the crawlers came closer, a slow march of determined toddlers with the black eyes of insects.
"They can't see us," Jessica said with determination, darting forward and grabbing the nearest robot baby.
It was heavier than it looked. Jessica held it out from her body. It was facing away from her, and she held on tight as it continued its crawling movements in the air, steadily putting its hands and feet into position, one after the other. She glanced around, then spotted the ball pit, at least 4 or 5 feet deep. Jessica threw the crawler down into the colorful balls as hard as she could, and it landed, half buried, on its side, still repeating its motions, and slowly sank out of sight.
"Marla, come on!"
she shouted. Marla set down Lisa and Alana beside Ron, then turned her attention to the baby crawling toward them. Her hands were shaking, like she was preparing to pick up a giant cockroach.
"Marla!"
Jessica shrieked. Marla screamed and shook her hands in the air, and the baby suddenly charged forward, clawing at the ground and biting at the children's feet. Lisa cried and fell to the ground, and the heavy creature grabbed at her legs as it crawled up on top of her. Marla bolted forward with a blood-curdling scream and yanked the metal crawler off the little girl. Marla cried out again as she spun and threw the creature through the air. It missed Jessica's head by an inch,